So when I first considered becoming a minister, I remember my mentor warning me, "Be careful. You'll get your heart broken. Ministry demands everything of you, and no one realizes that." I didn't listen, of course. I went to seminary compelled by a calling that I couldn't ignore, a longing to create a more loving, compassionate world, and to help people remember who they are at their best when the world has tried to make them forget. Now, at first, I didn't think I wanted to be a parish minister, because being accountable to 200 or so people, to all their projections and their demands, felt like an absolutely impossible task. I'm a mere mortal, after all, with my own lessons to learn and a tender heart. But after doing my internship in Santa Monica and then a year's consulting ministry in Studio City, I fell in love with the work of ministry. Not that those years were simple, oh no. On the contrary, they exposed me to the complexity and messiness of ministry, serving people who disagreed about many things and who found themselves entangled in the very things many of us struggle with. Like, how do we get along with others when they have really different worldviews? Or how do we navigate conflict and live in covenant, in community with one another? But there is something about being part of a community, wrestling with that tender work of being human, being amongst people who are trying to understand one another better, who are making attempts at creating a more loving world, and who want to learn and grow. That was actually utterly compelling to me. Now, of course, in ministry, I also found a place where my varied background in counseling, in therapy, in coaching, theater, business management, and spirituality could all come together. Finally, I felt like I didn't have to leave a part of me aside. I could bring it all for a higher purpose. I could serve the longings of the heart. I could explore the yearnings of the soul. I could seek to make the world more just and employ my wide-ranging interests and background in service of a community helping to heal a hurting world. But what I didn't fully understand then was how completely consuming, while also somewhat invisible, so much of this work would be, and that it would take 10 years to go from discernment to becoming a fully fellowshipped minister, including undertaking a Master's of Divinity, an internship, ordination, numerous exams with endless paperwork, evaluations for many years, and many hurdles to cross. And the joke is that the more liberal a religion, the harder it is to become a minister. Because you can't just rely on God's calling. Now, many people think that ministry is what happens for 1 hour on a Sunday morning. A few words, some hymns, a chalice lit, a story, a blessing spoken, a sermon. What could be simpler, right? Some of you know there's more to it than that. But because we have so many people here who are new, and some of you who've asked recently, I thought I'd share what ministers actually do beyond Sundays, and why I don't preach every week, or why I go on study leave and sabbatical. And of course, these are great questions. So I wanted to take you behind the curtain a little bit, or maybe behind the swinging doors of the kitchen. So think of Sunday morning as a beautiful meal served in a cozy restaurant. What you see is the plate brought to your table, thoughtfully arranged and hopefully delicious. But back in the kitchen, it's a whole other story. That's where the prep happens, the chopping and the stirring, the sauces simmering, the staff coordinating, the menus created, the late deliveries and the unexpected fires to put out. Some days I feel like the head chef, and other days I'm also the dishwasher, the host, the server, the head of HR, and the one plunging the clogged sink. So each worship service is a creative collaboration. I choose the topic, the readings, stories, work with Anthony on the music, meditation, and message. And there are no rehearsals. Every week, it's a brand new production brought to you fresh, hot off the press. In theatre, we had 6 weeks of rehearsals before we did something like this. In Unitarian Universalism, we don't have a set lectionary or a prescribed message as you do in Christianity and some other religions. So we get to choose, which means we also have to choose and discern and wrestle with what matters most right now, what needs to be said, and how can I minister to the needs of the day? What are people's hearts and souls longing for? And of course, that kind of spiritual creativity takes time and care. Now, a sermon and service take me about 15 to 20 hours each week to research, reflect on, write, and shape. And I'm not trying to deliver a TED talk or a university lecture or even a how-to list for happiness. I'm trying to craft something that feels like a cool drink in a hot, dry week. Something that reaches you where you are and helps you make meaning and feel less alone and more centered and breathe a little deeper. And something hopefully inspiring in some way. But there's a whole lot more happening in the background that makes this feast. So each month I attend or lead somewhere between 25 to 30 meetings. And these include our board, the council, staff, worship, pastoral care, religious exploration, justice teams, interfaith coalitions, finance, stewardship, membership, the auction, and more. And I meet with staff and our board president every week, one-on-one, to support their work, collaborate, and troubleshoot issues. And also, many of you may have experienced my pastoral care, which I offer to folks who are grieving or who are struggling with something in life or who are sick or who are discerning a new path. I officiate weddings and memorials and special blessings. And of course, every week I write and write and write sermons, newsletters, congregational reports, grants, policies, and edit news and notes. And other times I wake up very early, 3 or 4 or so, to catch inspiration for a sermon. Now, you may also encounter me developing and teaching classes like the one I'm teaching right after worship today on gratitude, or planning committee retreats, or working with justice partners, or out at a rally. You may find me helping to organize the auction, or the pledge drive, and troubleshooting tech, or mediating conflict, and planning the next season of services. And I'm also out in the community, meeting with interfaith and UUMA colleagues, as well as UUA staff, to keep abreast of our denomination's direction and collaborate with local partners. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, there's responding to hundreds and hundreds of emails and messages each week. And yes, sometimes I can't sleep thinking about how to solve problems I have little clue how to solve, like how to deal with authoritarianism, or how to keep immigrants safe, or how to deal with Zoom bombings. But all of these things come across my plate. So some days I'm a therapist, other days I'm a coach or a spiritual companion. Some days I'm a tech support person, a writer, a CEO, a community organizer, or a stage manager. Believe me, it's never dull. And it asks a lot. In fact, I often work 50 to 60 hour weeks with only Mondays off. But I love it. I love it because I care deeply about you and our mission together in this world. I love you all deeply. And I want the very best for you and for our community. And of course, ministry today is not what it was 5 years ago, or even 10 months ago, and so much more than what they taught us in seminary, believe me. Every day there's a, oh, they didn't teach us this in seminary, that happens. The landscape keeps shifting. And I watch the news every day to keep abreast of how our world is being impacted so that I can meet the unbounded need of these days, or at least try. People are tired and scared, and life is demanding. The world is really hard right now. And of course, what touches one of us touches us all. And I feel all of these feelings with you every week. But that's why Chalice's ministry matters so much now. That's why we need to all do it together. And of course, after 9 years here, I'm not the shiny new minister anymore either. And I'm certainly not a perfect person, believe me. I have my own moments of doubt, reactivity, and fear about the world. And there are times when my inner child shows up in full force and feels not good enough. Like many of you, I sometimes wonder whether I should do more of one thing or less of another, or I worry about something that I said to someone. But then I try to catch myself and I remember to accept that I have strengths and weaknesses, just like anyone else here. So I simply can't be everything to everyone, try as I might. But if there's something that I can do to help you, I will. And if I can't, I'll be honest. And believe me, you can always come and talk to me. I hope you know that. And don't ever think I'm too busy. I am busy, yes, but I care deeply about what's going on for you. So please feel free to reach out in need. So no, I don't preach every Sunday. And no, those non-preaching weeks aren't time off. They are the time when I can focus on the mountain of other responsibilities while also leaving some room for reflection, for learning, for reading, and the inevitable surprises. Now, the UUA recommends that ministers preach about 32 Sundays a year, and that helps ensure that the work is sustainable, and it also gives space for other voices. Because, my friends, this is not a solo act. We are a shared ministry, like I shared in the story earlier. Every committee member, every worship associate, chalice circle leader, RE teacher, board member, visiting steward, musician, and pastoral care provider, you're all ministers in this congregation too. That's how this place works. We share our ministry, and we're so much more together than we could ever be alone. So now about study leave and sabbatical. How do those help the congregation? It's a good question. First of all, stability. The pace of ministry can burn people out. And many ministers are quitting these days because of the enormity of the expectations of this time in our lives and the work. Most ministries average about 7 years or less because of the stress of the work. In fact, there's currently a shortage of ministers. So sabbaticals and breaks allow me to continue serving you for the long haul with clarity, with energy, and with presence. And secondly, inspiration. When I return from time away, I come back refreshed and brimming with ideas and stories. After my last sabbatical, I had 12 sermon outlines waiting to be written from all of the crazy things that happened to me during sabbatical. Third of all, empowerment. When I step back, others step forward. Right, Tim?
That's right.
Guest ministers, lay leaders, and new voices bring energy and fresh perspective. You get to remember how important your contribution is to our co-creation and to be guided by our mission in which we nurture spiritually courageous people who transform the world through justice and compassion. And we do that by building a community grounded in love, belonging, and courage together, by living into our values and mission with integrity together. And that takes constant recommitment and spiritual practice. So yes, my friends, Sunday might be the plate that gets served up each week, but the recipe, the prep work, the kitchen crew, that's the part we all share. Just like a restaurant, ministry is not about one person at the front of the room. It's about all of us co-creating something beautiful, meaningful, and resilient together. And it's about accompanying one another through the complexities of life and figuring out how we can all grow into the best versions of ourselves. And it's about navigating these challenging times together, holding one another in care, and inspiring each other to keep on keeping on. We need one another now, my friends, more than ever. And I am so grateful to be in that kitchen with you, co-creating magical dishes that we can serve up to those who are hungry for meaning, purpose, justice, and love. My friends, may we keep creating beautiful feasts together to share with our world. And now Tim wanted to share a few thoughts about his view of ministry. I'm going to go sit down there and watch you,
Tim. Well, that's a hard act to follow. Thank you. That was beautiful. Reverend Nika asked, there's a lot of echo. Can we do anything about that? Or is that okay?
I think you're good.
Oh, no? Oh, I'm just hearing myself. Okay. Reverend Nika asked me to join her in the service today, as I have served on several important committees since and even before she came here. In other words, I have been a part of a lot of what has happened in that kitchen she referred to. To start, I served on the Ministerial Search Committee. Our committee was charged with finding a minister who could bring excellence in a number of ways: inspiring worship, strong management skills to steer us through financial challenges, someone who could maintain or even grow the congregation at a time when church communities have been shrinking, a compassionate pastor to serve our communal spiritual needs. And overall, we wanted someone who could be an innovative, insightful, and energetic collaborator. We met with a good number of candidates, each with their own strengths and weaknesses. From the start, however, Reverend Nika stood out for her ability to perform well in every category of congregational ministry. As our search evolved, it was clear that Reverend Nika matched our needs exceptionally well. And we were more than delighted that she felt the same about us as she accepted our call. When she arrived, I was one of a few people from the search committee who was invited to join the Board of Trustees. The board governs and manages the congregation, making decisions, setting policy, and handling finances. In my 4 years on the board, some of the major issues that came before us were initiating a capital campaign so that we could own this building outright, renaming the congregation, and planning for the expiration of our lease of the sanctuary. Any of these situations could have been a disaster. Working on the search committee had brought me into contact with many congregations, and I saw that complicated issues like these, if handled poorly, can leave lasting scars on a community. Reverend Nika and the board have been proactive, steady, and circumspect in navigating the many challenges that have come to us. We didn't always get the outcome that we wanted, but our congregation has survived many stressors and continues to grow and thrive. Under Reverend Nika's leadership, we have a culture where our values and our covenant guide the ministry we co-create. After the board, I was invited to join the Committee on Shared Ministry, which handles the other side of the coin from the board, attending to the spirit of the congregation and the minister. This is where we consider how the congregation may be feeling about things that lay ahead, about how difficult decisions might impact the community. This is also where we check in with Nika to see how she is tending her own spirit as she leads and supports us all. This group handles delicate questions. Our work is group discernment as Nika engages us to consider the best way forward. And lastly, I have been serving on the worship committee for the past few years. The focus here is putting together those tasty Sunday plates of soulful sustenance that Nika referenced. Every month, we are evaluating past services, planning future worship, and digging deep into the next month's theme. This is also the committee that, with a lot of tech support, thank you very much, was able to quickly move on to Zoom to maintain services during the COVID pandemic. Each month, Reverend Nika invites us to be co-collaborators in creating services that arise from distilling the experiences of our own lives. And I believe that's how we are able to maintain our quality even when Nika is not in the pulpit. I chaired this committee during Nika's previous sabbatical, and it gave me a deep appreciation for the skill it takes to lead the group in crafting our weekly gatherings. And to think that is just one of the many committees she's leading every month. Personally, I was very happy to hear that Reverend Nika was requesting sabbatical, because I know it has been a time of tumult in the world, as well as lots of change in her own life. But I understand people have questions. Why now? This actually is a perfect time for Nika to take a sabbatical, as the same leadership is still in place as was here when she stepped back a few years ago. Is this actually the beginning of Nika moving away from Chalice? No, not at all. Sabbatical time is written into her contract because it is critical to a minister's being able to replenish their own spirit and be revitalized for this demanding work. And you might even be asking why she's going away during a time of division and strife in this country. Well, there's never a good time. But I hope that what I have said today helps you see the degree to which we all do this work together. And because we already do it so well together, we will be able to hold steady during the several months of Nika's sabbatical. These last 9 years have been challenging in so many ways. We can be sure that the weird times aren't over. This sabbatical is for our well-being as much as for Nika's. Through it, we will grow stronger as a congregation, and when she returns, we will continue this beautiful work of love together. May it be so. Please rise in body or spirit now to join us for our closing song.